Boy, what a good time to be a baseball fan. The Giants are in first place. They've won six straight. They've got the Rockies again tonight, and we get to talk with Bruce Jenkins. Bruce, how are you?
Good, Marty. How are you?
Well, very good. It's quite a week. I don't even know where to start. Let's just start with the Giants right now. 75-41, and there's no stopping them. You look at the week, and they won a couple in Milwaukee. Maybe they should have lost. They blew the lead to Arizona. They almost coughed it up last night, but they don't lose, and they just grind it out every night, every night.
Yeah, it's perfect Giants finish. You know, Rodgers was great. They turn over to McGee. He's the closer. All of a sudden, oh, my God, he's not getting it done. What are they going to do? And, you know, Littell comes out of nowhere, and Kay's a very hot hitter to end the game. Blows him away with a fastball. Just beautiful. All of a sudden, oh, yeah, everything's great. And yet another guy has stepped up at a perfect time. Somebody you never heard of a few months ago, and it just goes on and on. The signing of Crawford to 2 years was a real treat, I think, for everybody. I think it's perfect. It's the perfect amount of time. I think everybody's happy with it. And, you know, the way Marco Luciano's playing in the minors, he's up to number six in Baseball America's minor league prospect rankings now, six in the big leagues. And he's going to be a big leaguer for sure. We'll see if he'll be great. But he's probably on that kind of a timetable where it'll take him a couple of years to be that player. And then, the timing should be good. So it was a feel-good night for the Giants.
Yeah, with Luciano and the way Farhan does it, who knows where he'll play?
Exactly, yeah.
You know, he could come up as a shortstop, and next thing you know, he's at third base and playing center field and left field all in the same game.
Yeah, I mean, if Crawford, we'll see how long he can take this. It's very possible, you know, after 2 years, he's still looking like the Giants shortstop. Not out of the question, I wouldn't say, but who knows? But, yeah, Luciano's the kind of guy who's a pretty big guy. He's probably going to get a little bigger, but he's a great athlete at the same time. So they'll have a lot of options, and, hopefully he'll be as willing as Chris Bryant, who can mentor him on that, to play anywhere.
Yeah, I was just thinking of Chris Bryant when you gave that description. It's a perfect Chris Bryant. So we'll see. But I guess it means Posey's coming back, which undoubtedly should happen. And then I think the big question becomes Belt. What do you do with Brandon Belt?
Yeah, I think after all the talk about cutting the payroll and finally getting rid of some of these contracts, it's hard for me to see them bringing all of them back all of a sudden, even if they're on short-term deals. I think it would be tough, especially because Belt, he's been playing great. He's been homering and hitting the heck out of the ball, and he's a very cherished guy to the organization, just like Crawford and Posey. So I don't know. So I think it's easier to imagine them not bringing him back, but at the same time, he's so valuable, and he hasn't really lost a thing. So what the hell? I mean, the important thing is that they don't sign up for 7 years and $1 trillion and tying up the books.
Well, Ron Wotus was on MLB this week. He had his 2,000th win as a Giants coach, which is an amazing record when you think about how
that
many
really
games
is.
He's been involved with. But he was asked the question about this team and what makes this team special, and especially the older players. And, did you see this coming? And Woe said, look, these guys have won World Series. They are World Series champions. And if they know how to play the game and if they're healthy, they can still play the game. And it's the truth. They're World Series champions. And, Bruce, they're playing like it.
Yeah, not to stray into the basketball too far, but it's the same thing with the Warriors, with Curry and Green and Klay Thompson. These guys are winners. They know how to do it, and that's a crucial factor. You get into the playoffs, and in baseball, get into the postseason, and you see guys who have been around, really stepping up, balance up against the Rosarenas and all the kids who are stepping up too, and it's exciting. But the veterans. Old guys win is an old adage, and it really does apply in a lot of cases. And, I think the Giants are going to be able to stick it out with these guys without it becoming an embarrassment to anyone.
Yeah, it's amazing. It really is. So what about the starting pitching? And, look, there's a long way to go to win this division. I mean, it's 46 games to go. The Dodgers are five back. They're getting the look of winning 20 out of 25 right now if they can straighten out some of the injuries and some of the pitching. So what about the starting pitching for the Giants? We can name them all, and with every one of them, you sort of have a little bit of a question mark.
Yeah, well, Gausman, I think his last outing was really encouraging. He wasn't perfect, but he threw some of those splitters that were completely unhittable. He still knows how to throw it, and I think maybe a little more mechanical adjustments there. I don't worry too much about Cueto, really, and DeSclafani's outing was pretty encouraging. I wasn't expecting him back that soon. And he kind of shrugged off the shoulder thing as something that can happen, you know, with the timing from last season and the way it's worked out into this season. And he was pretty good. So, and, you know, Brandon Webb looks fantastic right now. I don't think it's too terribly dire. And then we get Sammy Long today, I guess, yeah?
Yeah, Sammy Long today. And I'm so glad you said Brandon Webb because I say it 50 times. I want to say Logan Webb. Logan Webb.
I did say Brandon Webb, didn't I?
Yeah, it's okay. I'm glad you did. I'm glad. I'm not the only one that does this. This is good. This is good. Brandon
Webb.
Yeah,
I called Albert Pujols Luis Pujols for like 6 years.
I love it. Come on. I think
Logan
he should
Webb.
Be called. I'm going to call him Brandon Webb. See, now I don't feel so bad about it.
Well, tell him his name really ought to be Brandon, and he should change it immediately.
To True Blue. We'll do a Charlie Finley on him.
Sorry about that, Logan.
Yeah. What a week. What a week for baseball. And we're going to get to some of these things. Number one, WOTUS, which was fabulous. He'll be on with me tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. But did you see Adam Wainwright this week, Bruce? What he did? He shut out. I forget who he even pitched against, but it was a shutout. Maybe it was the Pirates. 88 pitches. 88
yeah.
pitches, a shutout for Adam Wainwright. How about that? It's like Maddox.
Yeah. Managers find it so hard to leave pitchers in the game, and it's just so wrong and so ill-conceived a lot of the time. But if a guy's only got 80 pitches or whatever going into the ninth inning and he's in control, you have to let him go back out there. And I just love the scene after the game, as we've said so many times. If you're a pitcher, there's nothing like the feeling that you went the distance. You know, nobody helped you. You started, you finished what you started, and it's obviously a dying, dying art. Something you hardly ever see, but it still happens occasionally. And I don't care who it is. I'm absolutely thrilled whenever it happens.
Jack Flaherty had a good game last night, and you know the Cardinals. When I think of the Cardinals, I just think of all the seasons where they were out of it, and all of a sudden in July or August, September, they made their run. Now, Flaherty had a great game last night. Wainwright's pitching well. They do have Arenado and Goldschmidt. They're 5.5 behind San Diego, and something is going to happen here. We're going to have a race to the finish, and someone's going to come out of nowhere. It could be the Cardinals.
Yeah. I've been about high on the Cardinals, but certainly not ruling them out all season for all the things you just mentioned. But, I mean, this is getting really nuts. If you're the Padres, who are clearly just reeling right now, and last night they get beaten a walk-off by Dalton Varsho in Arizona. I mean, they're only 2.5 ahead of the Reds in the wild card, but meanwhile in that five and a half games back, mm-hmm. You've got not just the Reds, but you got the Phillies, the Braves, the Cards, and the Mets.
That's right.
I mean, they're all within a couple of three games of the Reds. I mean, that's going to be unbelievable. I think, you know, we've been so conditioned to thinking, well, the Giants can win this, and then we'll see LA and San Diego in the wild card, and that's it. But all of a sudden, that's not it at all. I mean, the Reds are right on top of the Padres now, and all those other teams. So those are all good teams. We're talking, you know, Arenado and the Braves hitting, and the Phillies with Harper, and the Mets. They're a dangerous team too, even with DeGrom out. All those teams I think are very fun to watch. There's no fluky stuff in there if any of them get into the wild card game. So, you know, Pete Alonso, I mean, geez, it's just fun. Like you say, it's really, really good.
Yeah, something's going to happen. We got to look at the Mets this week for the first time, believe it or not, in August.
Wow.
So finally got to see the Mets. How about Corbin Burns, Milwaukee?
Geez.
And, of course, you talk about Burns and Woodruff. They pulled Woodruff out after three innings. He didn't have it, and he had a tremendous lead. Peralta, the three of them, but Burns struck out 10 in a row. Now, Nola did it this year, and the last time it happened before that was 1971 or 70 with Tom Seaver. So it's the year of the, you know, the strikeouts. People strike out.
It'll probably happen tomorrow, too. I mean, it's just that's going to be a little bit more common than the rarity of what Seaver did and lasted for so many years. But yeah, Burns is his stuff is so good. It really is. And you know, I'm just glad to see any pitcher who's still thriving after the whole spin rate thing with, you know, cutting down on the sticky substances. And well, they're not going to be able to break off those splitters and cutters and curveballs and sliders like they used to. But you know, guys are still doing that. And I love it when you see it. There is more scoring, but there's a little bit of everything for fans right now.
Well, it's tremendous. It's tremendous baseball, which we're going to get to more of it. But the game on the field. Now, look, Kyle Freeland tonight against Sammy Long. Who knows what will happen? But there was a game tonight in Philadelphia, and the Reds are playing the Phillies, and the Reds had this – Tyler Mahle had this great game last night and beat Zach Wheeler. And tonight it's Luis Castillo, who's pitching great, against Matt Moore. Now, Matt Moore is the worst pitcher in the National League. I mean, I feel for the guy. You know, he can't get anybody out. So here it is, 6 innings, no-hit ball for Matt Moore tonight. It's now in the bottom of the seventh. The Phillies are winning the 2-0. Moore's out of the game. And he pitched 6 innings of no-hit ball. So
I thought
maybe it's Mike Moore. Maybe it was Gary Moore.
I think it's Roger Moore. It's a James Bond film.
Right. Maybe it was Clayton Moore, you know, the Lone Ranger. But come on, Mike Moore. This is why we love baseball.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. And you know, I've always been watching Castillo, who was a Giants prospect, and he's very, very good. He's not terribly consistent, but man, he's got great stuff. He's going to be huge if he might start that wild card game if they get into it. So, yeah, complete craziness, Marty. It's the way we like it.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's now 3-1 Phillies, and they've gone to the bottom half of the eighth inning. So the Phillies finally gave up a hit. 2 hits by Archie Bradley gave up 2 hits. So that's that story. All right, let's get to the Field of Dreams. You wrote a tremendous column today in the Chronicle. Everybody should read it online or buy the newspaper. But your thoughts about the Field of Dreams, and I thought you nailed it pretty well.
Well, I was really excited about it. You know, I love the movie. I love The Natural. I'm a sucker for these things. That stuff kind of moves me a little bit. Just growing up, following the game and reading about the history, and I've got a fairly forgiving heart in a lot of ways. And the hype for that game, you know, listening to the endless, you know, David Ortiz and A-Rod and Kevin Millar, that got a little tiresome for me. I mean, they didn't answer the basic questions, like, is that a chicken wire fence in front of the corn, or can you hit it right? You know, let's talk about the field.
How about the corn? Is the corn real? I guess
it's right. It's acres of fake corn.
Right.
Astro-corn. It's actually asparagus, but
astrocorn, right?
Yeah. but they finally start the game, and by the way, that center field camera, geez, it was so tight and incredibly clear, and really got in on the action more than the standard center field camera. But you know, the game was just fantastic, back and forth, balls flying into the cornfield, and it was just really, really good. I thought it was well broadcast. The telecast was very good. The Kevin Costner angle was very, very good, very instructive. And it is funny. He had a chance to throw out the first pitch. And if you've seen him throw, which I did, that was one highlight of during the week. They showed him playing catch with somebody. He's got to be what, 60 something? He has
probably,
to be.
Yeah.
His arm looked like he was 20, and he was a good athlete. So anyway, a lot of nice touches, but I was very moved by it, you know, and the way that it ended. And, you know, I think the players, when they first heard about it, you know, they're getting there the day of the game, and they're leaving that night. They're not even staying in the town, and the travel, and, oh, my God, it's inconvenient. Is this really that cool? But by the end of the game, they were talking in reverential terms about what an experience it was. And you can imagine. I mean, they really did play in the middle of a cornfield, and they, you know, very, very close to the original Field of Dreams site. And you know, there's a lot of sponsorship involved, and the tickets were expensive, and a lot of modern day things. But really, all of that to me, all of that disappeared once the game started, and it was really a treat.
Well, they're going to come back.
It just shows you what the setting, you know, can do. In other words, you know, you saw a game at Ebbets Field, right? And I saw a game at the Metrodome. That's not the same thing, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
To have seen a game at Ebbets Field, you remember that for the rest of your life. I have to still hold my ears for the Metrodome. But the setting of a game in baseball can make so much difference, and that I never let go of what a wonderful setting it was.
It was beautiful. The sun setting in the background, and they really pulled it off. Fox did a great job of pulling it off. So what do you do? Of course, they've already announced they're coming back next year, which, you know, I'm sure they will. Baseball needed a shot in the arm. The All-Star game was kind of a dud, you know, all the controversy about moving it. We've got pitchers coming off the mound being inspected for tacky stuff. You know, we've got all sorts of questions about the game and injuries and seven-inning doubleheaders and COVID lists and all that. Baseball needed this shot in the arm. So what do you do now? And I was thinking about it. And, of course, the Giants should play there, Moonlight Graham. They could all be dressed as Moonlight Graham. You know, he was a New York Giant, so they could do that. But then I said to myself, well, why not put the All-Star game there every other year? And then you could have everyone with hopefully different uniforms, not the same uniform.
Yeah, you have to do. If you're going to play in a cornfield, you got to go back to the real unis.
Right, and then it would look a little bit like the movie. And then you could have the players, it wouldn't be the same ones, but they would be coming out of the cornfield again, and you could use it for the All-Star game. I don't know how many regular season games you could play there. It looked like a bandbox. I mean,
well, yeah, it is, and... And, you know, baseball would never go for that because there aren't any hotels and you can't pack, you know, all the sponsors and thousands of fans. And that the All-Star weekend is a big moneymaker for the game and money talks. But I would like to see the All-Star game there. I don't think it's too realistic. But I just mentioned in passing in my column that it would be interesting if they could resurrect one of the old Negro League ballparks.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard from a couple of readers already who suggested Birmingham, which is interestingly is where Willie Mays played. There's a park there that still exists, and you know they could work on it for a couple of years and get it ready for one of these games, and then the whole episode becomes a lesson in Negro League baseball, which would be tremendously instructive, even for you know people who like you and me who like to pay attention to history. We'd learn a hell of a lot too, and that's just one thought. Maybe they'd go that way.
Well, I think they're going to do something. But I just don't know if you could keep playing regular season games there. You had something in your column today about original dimensions of ballparks. and it was great because Tom Tolbert, you know, you had a nice part of the column today about Tom Tolbert. And Tom loves, you know, home runs and he loves the scoring, but he still loves the essence of baseball. And we've kind of lost it. And the column was very funny. Was you're constructing a ballpark with the old dimensions from other ballparks, and essentially the fences were about 520 feet away, basically. So you had to do the hit and run and everything else. It was a lot of fun reading it.
Well, I have this great book called Green Cathedrals, which any fan who's interested in this, they list every park that's ever been in existence, including some totally obscure ones that you've never heard of for the Negro Leagues and all manner of sites and statistics on those, but they give you the dimensions and how they change over the years. So I just went through the whole thing looking for the most radical numbers I could find for, you know, down the line and right center. I mean, Yankee Stadium during Babe Ruth's prime was 490 to center and 457 to left center, but those weren't the high numbers. You know, they were, like you say, there were several parks where it was 500 feet plus to center field, and that one dimension in Braves Field at like the deepest corner, 593, Marty. I mean, God almighty. Which, and a lot of them dated back to like the dead ball era when you wouldn't even, you didn't have a chance of hitting the ball out. So pretty interesting, but it'd just be fun to watch a season in really big ballparks and see how the game changed.
No, it's good stuff. I love the Boston Braves one, which you just alluded to. Right field. They put in stands out there, and they called it the jury box because it looked like a jury box is what they created out there, and that was right field at the old Boston Braves field. But it was good stuff. It really was good stuff. A couple other things. One, Vada Pinson's birthday passed this week, and I just wrote it down in my notes that what a ball player. and we don't recognize him too much, but close to 3,000 hits. Veda Pinson, Bruce.
Yeah. You know, from my time when I really started watching the game at Dodger Stadium, you tune into the All-Star game, and it was pretty good bet. You'd have Mays, Clemente, and Aaron in the outfield, and then Frank Robinson would sneak in there, and guys like Veda Pinson and Curt Flood and Johnny Callison and Billy Williams were just tremendous, tremendous ball players, stars in any era. And they weren't at the very top, but geez, they were really good. Pinson, you know, he's a local guy, East Bay guy.
Yeah.
McClymans. And
right.
I think he went to McClymans, yeah.
Yes, he did. That's right.
Yeah. And, just a good hitter, a good fielder. Beloved guy. Loved those Cincinnati teams when they'd come in with the red sleeves and Frank Robinson and Pinson and Wally Post. You know?
A Hall of Famer. He just got overshadowed by the others. But
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, I mean, when you're looking at the Hall of Fame, you're looking at the guys who truly stood out as the best of their time. And sometimes somebody like Veda Pinson is going to get bypassed, and who knows? Maybe you stick him in a different era, and he becomes one of the very best. But he was exceptional.
Yep, have great speed. Frank Robinson and Veda Pinson. That was a 61 Reds.
Yeah.
Hey, I got a text. Kevin Costner is 66. Okay.
And he's still got a hose.
Yeah, very good. The whole thing came off perfectly. And as I said, baseball needed a shot in the arm. They needed it. They needed to get back to their roots of what the game was all about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it touched everyone who loves the game. And there was something in there for everybody. And it ended with, as you put in your column, a Hollywood script that you'd have to say that didn't happen, did it? with Tim Anderson. And the funny thing about Tim Anderson, it was interesting to hear him talking before the game with CC Sabathion. I don't even know what it was on, YouTube or something. But he said he never saw the movie.
Huh.
And, being African-American, he says, I don't go to movies like that. Did you see blah, 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 which, of course, I didn't understand what movie it was he was talking about. But he'd never seen Field of Dreams, and he knew this 2 years ago and still hadn't seen it.
Yeah, I thought interesting that after the game, he's a great talker, and he's a real good ambassador for the game. He totally loves it. He's into the spirit of celebration and getting black kids involved in the game, and he's a really strong voice.
Isn't
it? And he was so moved by not just his own home run, but the whole setting. He was very, very quiet and just so respectful of what had just happened after the game. You could tell that it really got to him, and it was so cool.
History, just a couple of minutes. 1971 in Pittsburgh, Bob Gibson, the great Hall of Famer, no hits. The Pittsburgh Pirates, the first no-hitter in Pittsburgh in 64 years, which you do the math, that would be 1907, I think. And, of course, today the Pirates are down 3-0 to the Brewers and ended up winning that game 14-4. So maybe this is payback. What could I tell you? But 1971, Bob Gibson, a no-hitter in Pittsburgh.
And when you say 64 years, that means that there was never a no-hitter at Forbes Field, 1909 to 1970. That's pretty remarkable.
Wow.
Now they move into Three Rivers, and boom, Gibson gets them. It was a little disappointing to me. I was a big fan of the 71 Pirates with the lineup they had. They did have Cash and Davalio and Oliver and Stargell, and that's plenty. But Clemente didn't play that day. Neither did Sanguin or Hebner. Richie Hebner, another one of my favorites. They all had the day off, so he had a little bit of a break there, but still a heck of a lineup. And, Bob, that's funny because leading up to that game, he didn't have his best year. He finished strong, but at the time he was like 10-10, and people thought he was washed up. And so at the end of the game, he strikes out Stargell for the third time on a slider that Stargell couldn't believe. And he said something like, whoever said he was washed up, those people should have had to hit against him tonight.
Really?
We've talked about Gibson many times. Just before that, he had a complete game win against the Giants for his 200th win, matched up with Gaylord Perry, and beat a team with Bobby Bonds and Mays and McCovey. But Bob Gibson, oh, my goodness, doesn't get any better than that.
Yeah, his only no-hitter. That was 1971. Great defense from Joe Torre, believe it or not. And I guess it was Jose Cruz who was with the Cardinals at that point, too. So, yeah, interesting, interesting. Boy, what a week of baseball, huh, in the middle of August?
And this one will be just as good, this one coming up.
All right. Thanks, Bruce. We'll chat with you tomorrow morning.
Okay, Marty. Look forward to it. Thanks a lot.
All right. That's wonderful. Boy, that is a great Bruce Jenkins. What a pleasure. All right. More coming up. We've got Joe Sheehan coming up next. Of course, he publishes the best baseball newsletter out there. Joe Sheehan is coming up next, and Bill and I will chat with him. And we'll look at some of the analytics of baseball and some of the things that he stresses. I really enjoy talking ball with Joe Sheehan. All right, he's coming up next right here at KMBR 680-1045, the sports leader.